Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Basketball News Podcast Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. How are you doing, sir?
Hey, Nikias, man. What's going on?
What is this?
Just want to say hi, man.
That is not how that works.
I'm feeling happy to be here. Thanks, Dunkers, for embracing your bounce again.
Embracing your bounce again. I am disappointed. I feel like we're recording an outtake of the podcast right now. I can't believe what I'm hearing. Glad to have you with us. This has been an eventful 48 hours of news. Like, we're coming fresh off of the Aces winning the title and having the title parade, in which if I can get a big
hold mad, on, hold on. Let's the hashtag is big mad, folks. I'm glad you brought this up. I'm trying to process a lot of things in my head right now, but never in my life. And Nikias has been having a season of winning here of late. I think all his teams have won for like the last 2 months. Anyways, I have never seen someone root for and embrace a championship win and enjoy the parade less than Nikias Duncan did. You would have thought the Aces just didn't win the title. And it was just Bill Laimbeer highlights from that team. Go ahead. Please let the folks in on how mad you are.
I am just upset at how the parade was streamed. I was not in Vegas for the parade. That's my first mistake. If the Aces win next year or whoever wins, like I just got to book the flight. Like, you know what? I want to cover whatever the parade is. I am not dealing with what I had to deal with on Tuesday night, in which there were so many commercial breaks and political ads, and they would come back to the parade and it's the news anchors talking over the celebration. And it was just a lot. It was a lot.
The funny part is they actually like were going wall to wall. The buildup was great. They were capturing the vibe. And then apparently once the parade started, things just went left for Nikias.
Yeah. The buildup was better than the actual parade coverage. I'm just like, what is this? Like, Chelsea Gray comes up to the microphone and she says like her first sentence and a half, and it's, we'll be right back after a brief break. I'm just like, what? I want to hear what the finals MVP has to say. What are we doing right now? Same thing with Kelsey Plum. And like, it's a championship parade. There are drinks. Like, Asia gave you the entire prompt post-game game 4. Come 4 shots in. You knew what the vibe was going to be. For things to be cut away constantly because the language was getting quote-unquote salty. What did you expect?
They're on broadcast TV. It's a news show. You can't do that.
Not with that attitude.
No, literally. Like, the FCC, you can't do that. Like, they could not risk it. They were not going to risk it for the biscuit. So I would say, hopefully a lesson's learned, and maybe we'll just get a stream next year.
That's what I would like. I just got to be there next year. I can't put myself through that. I was ready to celebrate. And we get the little bit that we did get to hear. We got some bars from Becky Hammon. We got some bars from Kelsey Plum when we were allowed to hear them speak. But it's the allowed to hear them speak part that had me frustrated throughout most of the parade. So that's my thing. Nothing against the parade itself. It's more so just the presentation for what we could see for the people that weren't in Vegas.
You just slandered a whole local TV network in Vegas. Why are you doing this to me? Why are you doing this to me? Shout out to Vegas for showing up and showing out. And I'm glad we got the steps of at least being able to watch the stream. But can we just leave Vegas alone? Please. Please. I don't need emails, text messages. I don't need that in my life right now.
You didn't, right? Didn't do anything wrong.
Keep going against the city. That's just all the cities, all my home away from homes. You just decided to want to get packed up by Vegas, Portland. They refuse to do it. I don't know why. Memphis, you attacked the Nets for a whole year. Like, I feel like everywhere I've lived, Phoenix, everywhere I've lived, you've gone out. Like, stop. Talk about Milwaukee or something like that. Oh, you can't. You love Milwaukee. Jeez Louise.
What do you mean? Hey, you think Chris Milton's going to pick up that $40 million player option? You think he's going to test the market?
Oh, he's testing the market. Cap going up.
There we go. There's your Milwaukee coverage for today. If we can swing it back to women's basketball very briefly. We did get some international play kicking off. Team USA played Belgium on Wednesday night, or at least Wednesday night in the States. They beat Belgium 87-72, led by a 22-point performance by Breonna Stewart. Alyssa Thomas was flirting with a triple-double once again. Kalia Copper was everywhere, particularly defensively. Steve, what were your initial takeaways from this first matchup for Team USA?
I like the starting lineup.
Okay, there we go.
No, I mean, I like the full court pressure they displayed defensively. The ball pressure was very good. It's very fun to watch Stewart and Thomas play defense together. Like, it's just fun to watch them mix the versatility. You have to deal with Kalia Copper pressing you up the court. You have to deal with them pressuring and denying passes. You have Stewie and AT just causing chaos. If they want to, you can switch screen, and now AT's roaming on the backside and scaring people out. You have AT switching rescreens, causing havoc at the level. Like, it's just fun to watch them play basketball together. I think that defense, you can see how important it's going to be to Team USA. It's just going to allow them to get out and run and flow and transition and get their points that way, which I think is going to be a big key for them, especially as they learn to gel. Whenever we have these type of teams, I always look at the defense first, because if you have that base, you're going to be able to grind your way through some games as some other things come up. When you get into issues is when the defense isn't quite there, and now you're searching on both ends of the floor. I did think Belgium found a rhythm with some cutting, with some pull-ups, but obviously it was tough for them to be consistent with it. But it was fun. It was good to see. Just, it's fun to watch the W season and see these players come together. Like, that's fun. Now you see, you know, Shakir Austin out there causing chaos, and it's like, oh wow, yeah.
Caused chaos in like three straight possessions in the fourth. I feel like this might get dangerous at a certain point. But no, I am with you. As far as bouncing off of the working through things point, like, I think it was nice for them to see the heavy dosage of zone that they saw. And just to get that test off rip and have to kind of work through that with a new lineup, like, it kind of, from my point of view, kind of speeds up the learning process a bit. Like, no, you're just getting thrown straight into the mud to figure it out. You're not going to get into your flow. You're not going to be able to just use your talent and abuse mismatches. You kind of have to work through the half court. And it felt like early on, it was a little bit of a sludge. They were able to find some looks, but it took some time to work through it. But from there, like, it felt like Stewie in the middle of the zone is just unfair. Like, I just don't know what you do with that if Breonna Stewart is lifting up from the baseline, getting to the middle of the floor. And now she can just shoot over the top of whoever you want. She can make whatever passing read you want. You can just catch and go from there. You can set up high lows from there if you're able to manipulate matchups from there. And so, like, they end up getting a lot of juice out of some of the sets they were running against that zone. And Belgium eventually got out of it and just said, all right, we're just going to go man. We're going to see if we can switch some screens, just kind of flatten them out and see where it goes. And Team USA was able to flow from there. But you hit the nail on the head. Like, their defense from the start, they jumped out to a 12-0 run because Belgium just couldn't get into their offense. Again, it's hard to overstate how good Kalia Copper was on the ball with her full court pressure, just her fighting over screens. It poor Julie Alomar. She just did not have a good time. And to that point, Julie Alomar also playing with Emma Mieseman, who only took 6 shots in the game, which I didn't have that on the bingo card, but you attribute at least some of that to Team USA defending her pretty well and taking away some of those gaps that she can kind of flourish in, that we saw her flourish with the Chicago Sky earlier this year. But the defense set the tone early. And even once Belgium started bombing away from three, like, the threes they were making were tough. It wasn't like they were breaking Team USA's defense down and getting open looks. It felt like a lot of end of shot clock type stuff. And then once the shooting dried up for Belgium, that was kind of it. And so I am curious to see if they're able to keep that defensive pressure up, because that drives a lot of their transition attack, as you've noted. And they fly in transition. And what makes this Team USA fun is that literally anyone on that roster can grab a board and go for at least a few dribbles. And so when you have that kind of skill level across the board, like, it almost doesn't matter at a certain point. If you're not back in transition, they're getting good shots or buckets or getting to the free throw line. And so, again, I think it was a pretty encouraging start for Team USA. They did not have any of the three Aces players that made the final roster, Chelsea Gray, Kelsey Plum, Asia Wilson. Unclear if they are going to play in the second matchup or not. I want to see what the rotation looks like when those three are fully integrated. Do you start all three? Do you start two of those players and bring one off the bench? It's kind of a change of pace guard. Like, I want to see what that looks like, but 15-point win, like, that's a pretty solid start, in my opinion.
No, I'm with you. And I do like the point you brought up about the zone. That is something I want to see going forward, because while they did have Stewie in the middle and that was tough, they also had some of the possessions where they didn't distort that zone at all, really. Mm-hmm. So how do they evolve with that as they go? You saw them go to more kind of double drag adjacent looks, try and get some screening actions in, do some horns actions just to try and loosen things up at the start. So I do want to see what that looks like going forward. And I do want to mention one thing.
Okay.
Which I thought was funny, right? So Gabby Williams lost her mind for France. And I love that we were talking pre-pod and you referred to it as the Gabby Williams game, which is totally fair. But also was like Lauren Jackson returning to basketball.
More antics. So
just wanted to, oh God. All right.
That story broke. Look, the Lisa Leslie story just broke. I just did not. You can't make that up.
This man was not prepared for that and has not recovered since.
Not at all prepared for that. And the video, do that. But yeah. Lauren Jackson's back. Gabby Williams is amazing.
Gabby Williams slicing and dicing. That Australia's team, that starting lineup is funny. You got Sammy Wickham. You got Rebecca Allen, you got Stephanie Talbot, and then Ezzy.
Well, hey, man, someone's got to defend, you know.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going somewhere else with that. All right, moving right along.
All right, let's go to the NBA side / I guess W adjacent in this case. Robert Sarver is apparently beginning the process to sell the Phoenix Suns and the Phoenix Mercury. I don't have much to add on this. But one, that's the right decision. Like, get Robert Sarver out of here. There's no place for him in either league in a management position. So I'm glad those steps are being taken. I will say the statement from him was weak, to say the least, to blame the unforgiving climate for why there's no why he's deciding to sell the team. Like, it just does not feel like there's really been any sort of remorse or introspection made throughout any of this. Which brings me back to the Silver press conference where it was even kind of alluded to, like, hey, this is a different guy. He's grown. He's shown remorse. He's doing good things now. It just doesn't feel like he even really recognizes what he did wrong or how much he did wrong. But beyond that, I'm glad the selling process is beginning. I hope that is something that gets done soon. He needs to be gone. That's all I got.
All right. I mean, I'm always trying to figure out which voice got too loud. My thoughts were precedents and then didn't have the right. They replayed in my head. It seemed like this was the pathway. And it seems like whatever resistance was there is no longer there. Still feel for those who are traumatized and re-traumatized, but yeah, you know, it's going to be interesting. You know, it's tough. I think when you're representing a certain side of things and there's a direction you kind of need this to go, but you kind of need it to unfold. The pressure was going to be too loud. It wasn't going to be the same. You couldn't put the toothpaste back in the tube, even if he did come back. Now what happens as far as like, cause there's other owners, like if I'm correct, he only owns a third of it, right? But he can sell it. So that's going to be interesting, but yeah, gotta go, man.
Gotta go indeed. Now, while we're in the midst of transaction news, I suppose let's flow into an NBA trade that came down the pipeline. The Jazz have traded Bojan Bogdanović to the Detroit Pistons. They are getting Kelly Olynyk and Sabin Lee in return. I didn't think Detroit would end up being the spot for Bojan.
I don't think anyone did.
Yeah, I'm not
sure. I was surprised at the A, the team, and B, the price. And I was like, why did no one swoop in there and grab Bogey? I'm relinquishing the free mic hashtag if Bogey got traded to Detroit. I don't know if I like the outcomes here.
Houston's on the board. But no, right. But no, in all seriousness, I'm glad you brought up the price point, because all we had heard was that, hey, I mean, the Vets are going to be on the market because the Jazz are about to lean fully into the rebuild, and that the price for these Vets were going to be at least one first round draft pick. Boyan's going to require a first or two. Mike Conley's going to require a first or two. Jordan Clarkson's going to require a first. We'll see. But for Boyan to go for a Kelly Olynyk and Sabin Lee, who change of pace guard that I like, I'll claim the sicko title for that, but that's fine.
Let me check his age real quick.
Oh, here we go. Sabin Lee's fun, but that's a fun gamble in my opinion. I don't know what the pathway to minutes are going to be because that guard room is still pretty crowded, but interesting piece to take a flyer on. I'm surprised that the Jazz weren't able to get a first or that they relinquished on that. And with it dropping from that first, where, to your point, where was everyone else? Because I think that would have been the now we can't do it point for a team like a Miami or a Phoenix. Like, we like Boyan. He was fit in snugly at the four. We would appreciate the secondary shot creation and the shooting, but we don't want to give up a first for him and he's expired. And Detroit's like, well, hey, here's a floor spacing big, floor spacing slash playmaking big, and here's Sabin Lee. No first, no picks involved. We'll take Boyan off your hands. And that was okay. How do you feel about the Boyan fit in Detroit?
He's 23 years old. This tracks. okay. I mean, it felt like a W for me, for Detroit right away. Mm-hmm. Been talking about it most of the offseason. I still am a huge fan of the moves that teams are making to just continue to jump up a notch, try and get better, try and maximize what they have right now, try and compete right now, try and elevate their status, even if it's just, hey, let's get in the play-in or let's push for the playoffs. Bogey, obviously, to me, helps them. His ability to shoot, number one, jumps off the page. His ability to space the floor also jumps off the page. And his ability to go score. He can create his own baskets. You can run multiple sets for him. You can post them if you need to. As you go percentage-wise, back to the Pistons' three-point shooting last year, it was the top was Livers, Corey Joseph, Rodney Magruder, and Justin Robinson. So an upgrade was needed. The lineup is what's going to intrigue me. Mm-hmm. So is Bogey going to be your four with Sadiq, with Ivy, with Cade? Is that the way you're moving towards that? Mm-hmm. Does that help the spacing for your guards? You mentioned the spacing for Cade Cunningham. Does this allow them to run some different things to put pressure on teams in a different way? Does that elevate your pick and roll game? Mm-hmm. I thought the cost was okay for Detroit. A, didn't have to give up any picks. Kelly Olynyk is good and solid, but if you look at the big man room and you have Bagley, you have Stewart, you have Durant, you have Nerlens Noel, like, I guess you could talk yourself into allocating the minutes somewhere else. Mm-hmm. And probably having someone like Bogey helps your lineup versatility, as opposed to, well, if we need this, we have to play this big. Mm-hmm. So you can play two bigs or you can go small. Sabin Lee, crowded guard room. So I think it would have been a shot to love to give him a chance, but I don't know if he would have gotten the opportunity, especially with the picks they just made. Mm-hmm. For Utah, I like the mix again. Like you mentioned, why didn't anyone sweep in? I think Utah's got a type of deal they're looking for. Mm-hmm. Like, hey, we'll take your intriguing players. We'll take a player that can help us now. We don't want a ton of salary, or we'll take a pick. Mm-hmm. But again, get some pieces, see what can help them now, see who they can go forward with, who could potentially be put together to get them better when the time comes. I am going to be respectfully messy here real quick.
Okay.
Let's talk about it, guys.
All right.
The Utah Jazz. Mm-hmm. Having Lauri Markkanen, mm-hmm. Kelly Olynyk, mm-hmm. Walker Kessler, uh-huh. and Cody Zeller, mm-hmm. is hysterical. The first part is obvious.
Yes.
Hashtag.
Go ahead.
Oh, can't even go with that hashtag. We're going to pull that one back.
Well, thank you for listening to this episode.
No. That one would have got us out of here. But .. The second part is it really is kind of just like two sets of Spider-Man memes. Like, y'all are both look kind of the same. Although I feel like a Lori Olenek lineup would be fun. I would enjoy watching it. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's all I got.
Okay, I got you. I'm glad you didn't get us out of here. I would say I am intrigued by the Detroit lineups. I think you just pencil in Boyan as your starting four. Like, I think you're going to have him alongside Isaiah Stewart at the five. I am curious, kind of while we're on Detroit, and we'll talk about this later in the offseason as we actually preview the Detroit Pistons. Who do you start alongside Cade Cunningham in the backcourt? Do you start Ivy immediately?
Why not? That'd be my guess. Mm-hmm. I mean, why not? What are you going to do? You're starting two bigs with Sadiq and Bogey and Cade. For me, it's like eventually you're probably going to have to get there if you want to play them both. So I imagine why not start there? But I could, you know, I've made the argument before. I could totally see just giving Ivy the keys to the second unit and then you mix and match rotation wise, a little staggering. But either way works for me. I'm talking myself into either way.
I got you. Like, I'm curious. Like, I definitely get the case for starting Ivy off rip. Like, just having that kind of speed and downhill juice alongside Cade, second side, that's a cheat code. Also, you kind of bring Ivy along slowly in that regard. Like, hey, you just play off of Cade, he's going to make the hard reads. You just slash into space and then make basic kickouts from there. Like, I think that's a nice setup for him. But, like, you can go a lot of different ways. If you want to prioritize the spacing, you can go with Alec Burks, a vet that can space the floor for you. If you
did,
want to.
Wait a minute. Did you just advocate starting Alec Burks over Jaden Ivey?
You could do that. I would not do that. I would go with Killian Hayes.
This was what this conversation was about?
It's not.
Are you kidding me? That question was for a Killian Hayes ending. That was the next point we were going to. No, I'm on the other side. Start Jaden Ivey. Yeah, that's your pick. No, what on earth?
What do you mean?
Oh,
what is the problem? Another option would be to start Killian Hayes, who has some experience starting alongside Cade, could bring you the point of attack defense, and especially at this stage of his career, like, he's not going to warrant 35 minutes a night. He hasn't proven that. You give him the spot starter role, have him play his point of attack defense, you flow into the Jaden Ivey line minutes. Like, there are options. There are three options to start alongside Cade in the backcourt.
So, if he hasn't warranted 35 minutes, why am I starting him over Jaden Ivey?
What is Jaden Ivey? What is he?
Wow.
I mean, he just got there. I don't know, man. I don't know.
Shameless rookie man. This guy advocates, let the rookies play, clear the runway. Every team should have 10 games where they let their player rookies play 28 minutes. And he's out here talking about Killian Hayes over Jaden Ivey. I am stunned.
I don't know if that's the same thing. It's fine though. Either way, you can go Killian, you can go Burks, you can go Jaden Ivey off rip. I think either of those options have credence on the Utah side. Only question I really have here is how long they keep Kelly Olynyk. Because I think he has use for him. And honestly, you look at the center room right now in Utah, like, they're. I just have to see Walker Kessler before I have any substantive takes there. And beyond that, like, I would like to see the bounce back from Cody Zeller. You just got to see it. So I think there's use for him. And of those three anyway, like, Kelly Olynyk is the spacer. He is a guy that can really give you some extra playmaking there. So if you want a vet in the starting lineup that can open things up for the young guys that you're trying to see, that makes sense. Like, I don't think you immediately ship him off before the season starts to try to get another asset. I think you have to give what this roster is, give him some runway. And I think he helps.
No, I don't think he gets moved immediately. Again, I think he helps them now and could be thrown in a trade if they need to, or he can stick around if he's a piece of what they need next. Although, just Colin Sexton and Malik Beasley, while also having Lauri Markkanen and Kelly Olynyk, is just funny to me.
Well, gonna get to run most of the same things. You know, some continuity there, scheme wise. Hey, man, just trying to find it. It's fine. Let's move it to some of the not fun news. Lonzo Ball, Bulls guard, will be having left knee surgery. He has been dealing with this same injury since last season. the injury that cut his season short. He will be reevaluated in 4 to 6 weeks. I just really worry about Lonzo. And I think some of the injury issues is, one, why he's not in New Orleans right now. But beyond that, it's a need for a guy that's very important to what Chicago wants to do defensively and also in transition. And I do wonder what Lonzo's absence, especially if it ends up being a long-term thing, like, what does that mean for Chicago's defense first and foremost? But zooming out, like, what does that mean for their lineup versatility? And how are they able to replicate all the things that Lonzo does?
Well, you're not going to be able to replicate what Lonzo brings to the table for that team. But I do think with Caruso, you can get some of the defense. With Goron off the bench, you can get some of the playmaking. So I think you can get pieces of it in a better way than maybe last year. Mm-hmm. You're a little bit more used to it as opposed to last year. For me, I would just want Lonzo to be right. And hopefully this left knee is going to be right after this one, especially as he's developed, as he made the move, as he improved defensively, shooting the ball, kind of found his stride in a way. And you hope that he gets healthy and gets back to business soon. But for me, I think this is a part of what Chicago kind of knew was coming. And you got Goron, you got Caruso, you got Kobe White, you got options. Not Killian Hayes, but you know.
Okay. Are you proud of that one? Might need some more of the size on the backcourt. It's fine. But I just kind of, we'll get into it later, but like, I just kind of worry about Chicago if Lonzo isn't going to be a consistent contributor for them.
This man came to double down.
Doubling down
already on the Chicago worry. This man is repeating last year's preview, even though he was loud and wrong. You're not buying into Io?
I like Io.
At the one?
I like it. I do.
This man's been waiting.
What do you mean? You say this like I'm happy that Lonzo was hurt. Like, I don't
know. That's not the words I said. I meant the Chicago slander, sir. The Chicago slander.
I don't think it's slander. Like, I was wrong last year. I don't think I said anything mean. Like, I had questions about the defense. The defense was better. Beyond that, this is a slander now. I'm worried about Lonzo. He's a very important piece of what they do on both ends of the floor.
No, you said I'm worried about Chicago. It's fine, though. Don't worry about it.
Okay. I am worried about Chicago because I'm worried about Lonzo. I'm not letting you do this to me.
Just wrapping them up together. It's okay to be worried about Chicago, but you just got to own it, bro.
Not letting you do this. While we're on knee surgeries, which is a wonderful segue, Celtics big man Robert Williams III is also having knee surgery. He's expected to miss 4 to 6 weeks. How do you feel about Boston's big man dealt beyond Robert Williams?
It's going to be a lot for Al to start. And the question is now, is it just going to be Cornette minutes flowing in? Are you now just going to have to play smaller to start the season? I mean, that's where I'm at off the top. Mm-hmm. Especially because he was such an important piece for them lineup-wise. Mm-hmm. You're not replicating that. You just need to get off to as good of a start as you can defensively, mm-hmm. and hope the lineups, the lineup versatility just won't be as strong as it needed to be.
Okay. I do wonder what the early season defense for Boston's going to look like. I mean, the personnel is still very strong, but I think it's still going to be a switch heavy unit. It's nice having Robert Williams as that kind of trump card on the back line to where, okay, we're not switching him, but we're putting him on the wing that can't shoot for you. And he's just going to disrupt stuff at the rim. And so I do kind of worry now that, like, it's different, as good as Al Horford still is, it's different challenging Al Horford at the rim versus challenging that kind of vertical juice that Robert Williams has. So I do wonder what that's going to look like. I wonder what that's going to mean for the rebounding. It's going to have to be more of a gang effort on that, in that regard. Beyond that, though, again, similar to the Lonzo thing, like, I just worry about the long-term health for Robert Williams. And I hope that this is the thing that gets it done and that he's okay moving forward. The reason that he's on the contract that he's on is because he's had some health concerns. He's very, very good. He's very impactful. Boston changes on both ends of the floor when he's on the court. And so from there, the challenge is, as basic as it is, keeping him on the court. And so I hope that he is okay, and that I hope that this surgery fixes what needs to be fixed and he's good to go, because Boston will need him if they're going to be making the title push, which they are set up to make with this roster. Does that also count as Celtics slander, or is that only reserved for Chicago? I just want to make sure I have the rules here.
Oh, not you. No, I'm not doing that. What are you also, Donovan Mitchell smashed a guitar prior to the Cleveland Browns Pittsburgh Steelers game. So there's that.
And he's integrating himself nicely.
And Kawhi Leonard is cleared.
Good for 5-on-5. And he's apparently jacked. He was always jacked, but he's more jacked. So very excited for this Clipper season, if he's also able to stay healthy.
No, we're doing muscle watch this year. I got you.
Muscle watch. I am not doing this with you. Oh, goodness. Thank you for the Mitchell and also the Kawhi updates. If we could go back to Boston briefly.
Is it going to be?
Yeah.
All right.
We don't have to talk about it. We have to talk about the Ime Udoka thing. He is a 1-year suspension is apparently imminent per Adrian Wojnarowski of ESPN for his role in a consensual relationship with a female team staffer. I don't even want to talk about the actual infraction for me. Like, the infraction is what it is. And the fact that a year-long suspension is on the table should signify that this was serious enough for the Celtics to reprimand him. I don't want to speculate on that beyond that, because I don't have that information. And I wish that would be the general consensus that people took with this kind of story. But I find myself frustrated with everything surrounding the actual incident. The initial report, which is just, hey, Ime Udoka may be disciplined. And that's just kind of it for like an hour from Woj. And then Shams comes in with the report that it is an improper relationship with the female team staffer. And we just kind of sit on that for a little bit. Or we should have sat on that for a little bit. But you look online and it's people looking up the Celtics staff directory and posting pictures of female team staff members and trying to guess who Ime Udoka had this relationship with no kind of regard of what the impact of that kind of thing would be and how many people would be affected by that kind of reckless and frankly childish speculation. And so I immediately found myself annoyed. One, why are we even dropping the MA bomb without all of the information? And then two, why are we doing what we're doing collectively? Because I was not looking for that kind of information. But like, collectively, why are people trying to put two and two together, doing so publicly and doing so recklessly? It's absurd behavior. And that should be frowned upon.
I mean, I don't know. You got to ask them.
Like, it just
the second part, this is the world we live in where messes are created. And if people go to read the book and if their pages are blank in the book, well, let's see if we can finish the story. I don't necessarily agree with it. I mean, all of this is kind of wild to me. I'm trying to absorb it. Like, the timing's crazy. I don't know how you handle this story if you hear wind of the imminent suspension, then has to come, you know, there has to be a reason for it. And the reason had to come out once that got attached to it. Mm-hmm. Like, but I mean, I'm not trying to piece this stuff together, man. These are people's lives, like, being affected. Yes. These are people's worlds changing, like, in the blink of an eye. Like, you can't measure this kind of fallout. Mm-hmm. Unless you're in the storm, but there's a consequence, and the why has to be attached to the consequence. Posting people's pictures, trying to guess, like, they're human beings. Like, these are people involved. Don't do that. There are families involved in some cases. Like,
Yeah.
Someone's going through it. People are going through it. We don't need the mud right now. We don't need to do that. Like, I don't, that stuff is tough, man. Like, to go back to the Boston part, like the 1 year suspension thing is probably the one that I was like, what's happening here? Because that is hefty, which signals something significant took place. But also it was said it was consensual. So then it's like, okay, is this like an attempt to get him to resign? How many years does he have left on his contract? Is this a threat? Like, what that part is off to me, you know, because romantic relationships in the workplace is one thing. And the whole, it happens all over the place that I see. I don't really want to touch that because, you know, just because something happens doesn't necessarily mean it should. And there's just a lot of potential for things to go left as far as a hostile work environment. And we don't have enough information, but that's like kind of workplace 101. Like, there's potential for bias, exploitation, retaliation. What happens when it stops? Like, what decisions are being made because of it? Like, it can go left quick.
A lot of gray. Yeah.
So clearly it had to be addressed, especially if it wasn't disclosed, but I don't, it's just weird, man. It's weird. It's yeah.
It is weird. And to your point about the, I guess, the possibility of him resigning, like Chris Haynes of Yahoo did report a little bit earlier that Ime Udoka is not going to be resigning as he awaits, I guess, the official punishment. And so if that's the play, it doesn't look like Ime is going for it. But again, like, this is kind of why, for me, I wanted to center the conversation around this. Because as far as if it's consensual, I don't know what the dynamic is.
We don't know the dynamic.
We don't know the dynamic.
But the power structure is the power structure. If you are in power, just it's how it works.
And so from there, like, again, we don't know what the dynamic is. And for us on the outside, like, we shouldn't be trying to figure out what the dynamic is. And we surely shouldn't be going about it in a reckless manner that can affect other people. Because again, just from what we know, like, MA and whoever he's dealing with is affected. Like, that's enough to just stand out and be like, all right, let him get punished for whatever it is. Let whoever he's involved with deal how they have to deal or how they have to cope with that. That's not our business. For people to go out and then you're tagging others, you're posting pictures of others, you're going to different social media apps and going into the comment section and doing all, like, what are we doing? And it just annoys me that A, that kind of behavior happens. And then B, whenever it's called out, it's, well, it's the internet. That's how it works. This is how people react. This is actually the reporter's fault for giving vague information because, you know, people are going to do this. Like I said earlier, like, it would have been nice if Walter Shams would have had the full report and just went with it versus vague report, follow up a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more. But also, like, if they gave us vague, we are not required to dig for more. That's not for us. That's not our business. That's not for us to potentially harm others for retweets and jokes and pats on the back. That's nasty behavior.
The world's a nasty place.
It is a nasty place. And, like, we should be working to make it a less nasty place. Like, I just didn't like any of that. And then on a lesser note, for it to, on one end of the spectrum, it's people caring too much and doing too much. And then on the other end of the spectrum is, why are we talking about this when the Brett Favre thing is going on? Just, like, we can talk about both. Like, that kind of sentiment always annoys me. That's just a me thing. Like, Brett Favre sucks. Let's get that on the record too. Like, I hope he's very much thrown under the jail. That's, but I'm just annoyed with people. I think it's kind of where I land with this. We have to be better than we are. We got to be better. We have to strive to be better. We have to call out behaviors that aren't in line with being better. And so as we learn more about what the punishment is going to be, what the fallout is going to be, like, I hope that everyone has room to kind of deal with whatever the fallout is without a bunch of outside mess.
Yeah. I mean, my mind's not even to the mess. Like, the mess shouldn't exist, but yeah, man, that's a lot to deal with on a human level as opposed to what people say on the internet.
Yeah. Well, that's all I got. I'm off my soapbox for a little bit, but didn't have the story on my bingo card, but also we just got to be better. Like,
mailbag.
Mailbag, indeed. Also, stop being... Never mind. Okay.
Mailbag. 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 I don't have the password. Mailbag.
It is time for the mailbag. Thank you, everyone, that sent in questions. If you have not done so before, if you have random basketball questions for us, email us at dunkerspot@yahoo.com. First couple are going to come from Jared, a watch party regular for us, who asked first, what is your ideal landing spot for Alicia Gray next season, assuming she does get a move out of Dallas?
What you got, guys?
Ah, man. She fits literally anywhere. Because of the defense, the shooting, the secondary playmaking, the slashing. Alicia Gray is really freaking good. Let's start there. Beyond that, like, the Liberty would do well with a defensive wing like that. She's not just a defensive wing, but the Liberty would really do well with a player of Alicia Gray's skill set. For starters, she'd be fun in Atlanta. I think Liberty would probably be my top choice, honestly.
I had Atlanta.
Okay. Well, there we go. We are on similar pages.
Love every now and then.
We've done the thing. The second question, how many points is Stewie dropping in her debut in the Seafoam next season?
Hey, what you got? 30 piece, 40 piece?
We're going to say 27 points for Breonna Stewart. And, I think she stays, though. I kind of think she stays in Seattle.
Mm.
I don't want to burst the bubble. Okay.
Sweet. Thanks, Nikai.
I'm sorry. We had it for the first question, not the second. Okay. Second pair of questions is going to come from Micah, who asked, assuming Skylar Diggins-Smith leaves Phoenix, whose clown drama got lost in season recaps given the Wings, what team do you think would benefit the most or be the best fit for her?
Who you got, Nikai?
I love that I get the tee off on the free agent questions. That's fun. If she leaves, well, one, if she comes back, I hope she's okay, first and foremost. Beyond that, if she does leave, like, especially since I think Erica Will is a free agent too, like, I would like Skylar in Atlanta. That would be fun. I think she's going to look for a more immediate title contender, though. So I think if Seattle's able to configure the books in a way, if they're able to bring Stewie back, Sue Bird is gone. If you're able to add a Skylar Diggins-Smith via trade somehow, like, that would do the thing for sure. It's also just like, who would have the, I guess going back to the earlier report when she allegedly requested the trade, like, Connecticut's kind of there in terms of salaries if you want to mix and match that way. Now, I will say, as someone that's relatively new to the W as like a diehard, like, I don't know what sign and trades look like on the W side, because as I was thinking about Skylar Diggins-Smith trade targets earlier in the year, it's like, okay, yeah, Phoenix, they have Breonna Jones. I mean, not Phoenix, but Connecticut, they have Breonna Jones. You have that salary and then you add a guard or add another piece and you kind of go from there. Breonna Jones is unrestricted free agent. So I don't know what the sign and trade rules are or if that's a prevalent thing in the W. So I don't know what the feasibility of that would be. But that would also be a nice landing spot if they can figure that out. Where would you go with Skylar Diggins-Smith?
I mean, I'd like Connecticut if you can make it work. Atlanta's not bad. I think I thought you were going Indiana for sure.
Got the cap room.
Also got some mouth congestion. It's fun. See, there we go. I thought, what if I'm gonna ask you a curveball here? What if she ends up on the Aces?
Oh man, for who would be my question?
One of them.
For one of them. Oh man, because she, like, Skylar was just the best guard in basketball this year, and so that would be fun. I just, on a broader point, I just kind of wonder how Vegas is going to handle the offseason. Oh, speaking of Vegas, quick congratulations to De'Erica Hamby, who announced her pregnancy during the Aces title parade. That's awesome news. Beyond it, though, I do want to know what the Aces do salary-wise, because they're going to have to work out some stuff. And so I think that would complicate any kind of big salary trade, for sure. Because they would have to fill out the roster spots beyond that. But Skylar in Vegas would be fun. Like, stylistically, that would just... She's really good, but also that's the vibe. And if you're worried about rim pressure with the Aces, Skylar Diggins-Smith has it in spades. Point of attack defense is incredible. Like, that would be... It'd be fun. I just don't know how they get that to go. Second question from Micah. Nikaiz, you just wrote a great piece on Becky Hammon's NBA-inspired sets. How much of that is replicable for other clubs next season, and how much of it is personnel-driven? I would say, well, one, thank you. But two, like, it's basketball. Like, the sets just kind of carry over to a certain degree. So I think everyone's running some variation of the same kind of stuff. Like, I do think there are some, and Kurt Miller alluded to this a lot when I talked to him, like, there are some NBA elements to, like, how the Aces mismatch hunt in particular and how intentional they could be about that. But as far as the actual sets, like, a lot of that stuff kind of carries over. So I think any team could just say, hey, we're going to run Spain pick and roll or whatever it is. As far as the personnel, like, I think a lot of sets are going to be based on who you have. Like, you're not running flop if you don't have a movement shooter. And so that's going to...
Disagree. You've watched some 90s basketball.
You shouldn't run a bunch of floppy if you don't have a movement shooter. But I'll say, just in that vein, like, that part of it is going to be personnel driven. Like, you got to run stuff that gets your best players their good looks. You don't want to have players out of place. But yeah, Steve, what would you say on that front?
As which part of
coach on staff?
Oh, which part?
I would say, like, how much of, I guess, just how much does personnel have a, how much does personnel play a part in the sets being run?
Personnel plays a part in the success of the set. Mm-hmm. It's a copycat league, whether it's the W or the NBA. You know, there's times where you play a team, something works, now you run it after a timeout, or now you start running it as a play, and as you build on it from there, you change an option. So, I mean, the copycat league element is always going to go. People have taken plays from the W and ran them in the NBA. People have taken plays from the NBA, run them in the W. It's, it's basketball. That part's going to happen. The tricky part is you have to have the personnel to make that set pop. If you don't have the personnel, it's not going to be the same. Well, I always go back to it, but when Philadelphia, Brett Brown first started, came from San Antonio, took all those San Antonio sets, didn't work the same because, yeah, you got the movement, but you don't have anything to end it with. So the personnel is going to drive if that works or not. You can run the same end of game set, but if you don't have a shooter that's a threat, or you don't have a cutter that can make it work like that, you're not getting the same result. You know what I mean? So it's great to lift. It's great to tweak. We're always going to see other teams use different plays, but if it doesn't make sense for your roster, then you're not getting the most out of it.
Yeah.
You know, it's great to, you know, if you have two bigs in the lineup, you probably don't want to run that same spread pick and roll that someone that has a small five is running, something like that.
All right. Gotcha. Good stuff, sir. Next one's going to come from Rob. Who asks, what moves do the Sun need to make to finally get over the hump and win a title? And does it involve firing Kurt Miller?
Jeez, Rob.
Going straight for the... right? I don't think it has to involve firing Kurt Miller. I'll start with that. I will say this is a team that's going to have to really invest in shooting at a certain point, and invest in shooting in a way that doesn't require Jonquel to account for like 60% of it. Because I think that's kind of the ebb and flow with Jonquel and trying to implement her in the offense. And we've talked about this a ton over the pod and during the watch parties, where it's like, you want to get her off of movement because she's such a unique talent and such a threat and can stretch your defense in that way. And you want to space her sometimes to open up the floor for everyone. But also, she's 6'6 with a solid post game and just powerful. Like, you also kind of want her on the block. And they always kind of run into this rut where, like, if you're posting up Jonquel, where's Alyssa Thomas and what is she doing? Because whatever team you're facing, they're helping off of her. If Courtney Williams is spaced on the weak side corner, like, they're helping off of her too. And they just have so many lineups to where they're talented groups, but they don't feature a lot of players aside from Jonquel that defenses care about, particularly in a playoff setting. And so I think the next step for them from like a personnel standpoint is they really have to invest in shooting around Jonquel. I think that would just make life a lot easier for them offensively. And again, this is a team that finished, I think, second in offense this year in terms of offensive rating. So like they, it's a testament to how good they are and the talents that they have that they're still able to score. But some of these ruts that you see in the half court, some of it is process stuff, but some of that process is kind of stunted by the fact that they don't have a lot of shooters that they care, that teams care about. And you see that statistically. Like, this is a team towards the bottom of the league in three-point percentage, and more importantly, like, towards the bottom of the league in three-point attempts. Even with the Aces shooting poorly for pretty much the entire WNBA finals, they still outshot the Sun from three because they had shooters willing to get them up. And shooters that, even when they weren't shooting well, still opened up the floor because they were threats and had been proven to be threats. And so I think that's kind of the low-hanging fruit. I mean, keep your size, keep the versatility, but like you can't be bottom third in the league in three-point percentage and three-point attempts. At a certain, like, it get to the middle of the pack.
Well, as a wise person once said, you make more threes, you win the game.
That's one heck of a callback. That's amazing.
It's what I'm here for, man. It's what I'm here for.
That's good stuff. Oh, we had a second question from Rob. With the Jazz trading anyone of value, what is the next NBA team you think that will commit to this level of tanking?
Well, Rob, I thought the guard play for the Sun, by the way. I didn't get asked the question, but it's fine. It's totally fine. Don't worry about it. Number two, the word here that I'm tripping up on is tanking. I don't know if, especially in this era, we are going to see the tank. I know some people disagree, but it's competitive. Like, if I had to look at a list of teams, there are going to be some bad teams, but I can't really list one that's saying, hey, we're not trying. So I don't know if we're going to get that. Now, I do think we may see some more teams try and reset. If this isn't working, I think we've seen that a little quicker than usual. I know if you're going down that path, you may see some different moves. So I think as the season kind of shakes out, you may see more teams try and move towards, hey, okay, I guess we don't have it this year type of deal. But I don't know if we're going to get the tank. I mean, Detroit just made a trade like that. You saw what Minnesota did. All these teams are, Sacramento still trying to fight, Portland. You know what I mean? These teams are making moves to try and compete and go up a level. If I had to pick a team that might fit that description, I mean, it's tough for me because is it just going to be a young team that loses and says, okay, we haven't made the moves yet, let's keep going. So like, what does an Orlando or Houston, I don't know if they count. They're just not ready yet. Yeah. Is it an Indiana who perhaps doesn't make the move yet, knows they're not good enough, just kind of decides to go that direction. Maybe a San Antonio. But I think the word tanking is probably too strong for me. Those may be the teams who adjust during the season.
Okay. Well, if I can bounce back off of earlier episodes of the pod, like, I think my answer here in terms of who's more likely to do, it feels like Washington is prime for this at a certain point. Like, I think that's the one where they may finally get. We'll see what this year looks like. That seems like team number one for me that may finally decide, okay, we can't.
They just pieced together the team with Will Barton and Monte Morris and DeLon Wright and
they sure did.
Taj Gibson. I think they believe in what they have.
They do unless it doesn't work.
Wow, we're getting a preview to the preview pod. So if you are a Wizards fan, if you are a Bulls fan, if you're a Pistons, no, he's gonna be high on the Pistons this year. But yeah, if you're a Wizards or Bulls fan, go ahead and buckle up. It's gonna be a bumpy ride.
I don't like this implication. The question is, who do we think would be the next team to try it? I think the Wizards is my answer. I don't think they're gonna do it this year. To your point, they have made these moves. They want to see what the Bill Porzingis duo looks like. They have interesting pieces. Like, I think they can be solid this year. Like, I'm not previewing their season yet. I'm just saying, like, if there's a team that is kind of in that middle and decides, okay, we got to reset, like, they would be the team for me. I think San Antonio's already kind of in the midst of doing that. Mm. But they just traded DeJounte Murray, too. So, I guess maybe the actual answer is just San Antonio since it's traded Murray. But as far as who's next for me, I think that the Wizards would be that team. All right. We have one from John. What do y'all think about the Nuggets as currently constructed? How much are they hurt if MPJ can't get better as a creator for himself and others?
I'm going to pause real quick. I do believe he is a good creator for himself.
Okay.
I'm going to throw that out there. I think I like the Nuggets as currently constructed. I like the fact that they have said we need to figure out how good this starting lineup is. Mm-hmm. And we know what they produced with that lineup. Hopefully everyone's healthy. I know we won't see that to start potentially, but if everyone's healthy, you have a good core. I think KCP fits well with what they do in that lineup as far as being able to space, being a movement shooter, being able to defend. So I'm excited about Denver being able to kind of, I don't want to say survive last year. Mm-hmm. And now they can kind of get back to business to where they were before. Now, the bench is probably where I lean the most. It's going to be so fun watching Nekias watch DeAndre Jordan and Jeff Green.
Oh, boy. If DeAndre Jordan's getting the backup 5 minutes instead of Zeke Nagy, I'm just going to be a very upset individual. I'm going to be honest with you.
Well, prepare to be a very upset individual.
Okay. When my first rant comes, don't be surprised. But
how many episodes we've done? 130. You've ranted about DeAndre Jordan for at least 112 of them.
Okay. That seems a little bit aggressive, I'll be honest. At any rate, since I do want to save some stuff for the actual Nuggets preview, I do like the Nuggets quite a bit. Like, I think the additions they've made themselves a little bit better defensively, made themselves a little bit more versatile from a lineup perspective. You know how I feel about Jokic at this point. I am excited to see Jamal Murray play basketball again. We get some youth growth from Zeke Nagy. We get year two of Bones Highland. This Nuggets group can be dangerous if they stay healthy. As for the MPJ point, the creation for others, I would like for them to be better at that because you just want players that can play make for others. I worry less about that and more about like what his self-creation looked like. If he's able to, I don't want his diet to just be, I can shoot over the top of you. Like, that should be a trump card for him. And it is a trump card for him because that man can shoot the leather off the ball. I would like for him to parlay some of these self-creation possessions into free throws at a certain point, though. Like, I would like for him to get some easier looks for himself. And I do think, not going to go into the rim pressure thing again, but like it would help if there was a little bit more juice there. So not necessarily like worried, but like Denver would definitely be better if he can make that kind of particular step.
I want to see if the cutting improves and what that does for him.
All right. Gotcha.
Actually, they just need him to be able to, he needs to be able to score, shoot, and hold up on defense. I'm concerned about those more than the creation. He can score.
All right. Got you. All right. We're going to go back to Jared, who hits us with a rank 'em. Rank these playmakers. Drew Holiday, Fred VanVleet, Marcus Smart, Darius Garland, Cade Cunningham, and Jalen Brunson.
Ah, good old impossible power rank. That's sure to annoy somebody. Let's try and do it, folks. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. We got 6, right?
Indeed.
Compelling content. Playmakers. I'm going to go Marcus Smart, 6. We'll go up from there. I'm going to go Jalen Brunson. Mm-hmm. I am then going to go with current version. I'm going to go Drew Holiday.
Okay.
Do I want to do that?
Yeah, having fun, huh?
No, we're going to go. We're going to go Marcus Smart, then Jalen Brunson. Then we're going to go with current Cade.
Okay.
We're going to go with, nope, I lied. Marcus Smart, then Jalen Brunson, then Drew Holiday, then current Cade, then Freddie, then Darius Garland.
Darius Garland won for you. Okay.
Yes.
Got you, got you. All right. Well, I will go Garland one. I'll go Garland one, Cade two. I will go Smart three, Fred four, Drew five, and Brunson six.
Smart three, huh? Over Fred.
Talk about it, King.
I just think Marcus Smart is just a really good passer. Like it's hard to say it goes undersold because like the second half of the year was Marcus Smart at point guard and Boston just blasting everyone. But like he's a really good creator. Does a good job of getting downhill, has skips in the arsenal.
So is Marcus Smart an all-star?
I don't think he's an all-star, but he's a very impactful player, very important piece to what Boston does on both ends of the floor. I don't know why you're trying to trap me in that. Don't do that. So,
what do you mean? You had Marcus Smart, what? We got the Fred article on All-Star. We got the Darius Garland article on All-Star. Dueling, I might add, at the same time. Man, it was... Had a CDL with all the.
They made the. What you want?
Everything he was pushing.
Wow. Give him a CDL reference. That's amazing.
Okay. The joke.
At least in a positive sense this time. could go the other way.
Could be like, what was the meme asking Ryan Tannehill, did he have a CDL?
I'm going to be upset if someone listens to this podcast. There was something, hey, the guys, you ever thought of that cool podcast? You ever thought about driving trucks? But anyway, this was going to come from Matthew. I was wondering if you guys have any thoughts on how certain guys have carved out long NBA careers as somewhat unconventional players. Ish Smith, for example, is a relatively undersized point guard that doesn't shoot threes at all. Doesn't shoot threes all that well, but has had a 10 plus year career in the NBA. How do guys like that do it? I'll go quick since you're going to have a better answer than I will. I would just say like, it's just kind of finding your niche, really, like having an NBA skill, having one good thing that you can do and provide plus value to a team. That's how you do it. Like Ish Smith doesn't shoot threes. The man lives at the paint and rim pressure is important. He's a change of pace guard for you that can hold up well enough defensively, or at least he could earlier in his career. But ultimately you put the ball in his hands, you are getting 2 feet in the paint. And he's kicking it to someone that can shoot way better than him or is just better than him. And as long as he can do that without turning the ball over, like there's a place for guys like that on the bench. You just kind of go down the line, like the movement shooters, like that opens up your sets, that opens up the floor for other players. If they can hold up enough defensively, or even if they can't, they give you that regular season value, opens up lineup versatility, things like that. So I think the simple answer is just finding a niche and finding a way to give plus value in one particular area that isn't easily replicated.
I think just using Ish Smith as an example, there's a consistency with Ish Smith. You know what you're going to get. You know what you're not going to get. You can add him to your team without necessarily taking away from anything you're trying to build core wise. Mm-hmm. So, you know, hey, I bring him in. He's going to do this. He'll play this amount of minutes. We'll be good. We got a good backup. We don't have to worry about anything like that. Now, the tricky part is, with some of these guys, it's hard maybe sometimes to find a home. Like Ish has played for how many teams again? And that's not necessarily his fault. But part of his ability to stick around is also because, I mean, what team could he not play for in theory? So do you have that kind of skill set as you grow, as your game changes? Do you have the buy-in to your role as things change, as the game changes, as a big, as you get older? Can you stay consistent defensively? Can you roll? It's probably going to be an opportunity for you, mm-hmm. especially if you fit in, buy in. It's a usually low risk, high reward type of moves with this. Do you have the ability to shoot? Has your game changed? Can you space the floor? What's the impact like there? Or can you make plays? Can you run the team? Give us these 10, 15 minutes and then move forward. So those are the guys, or even defenders. You know, if you can defend, if you have that 3-and-D adjacent type skill set, probably gonna get opportunities. But you do have to be able to fill that bucket pretty consistently. Like, you got to have a record of having done that time and time and time again. Because for as many of these guys that could continue to go and continue to make it, some guys lose their fastball. Sometimes can't, they don't necessarily do that anymore, mm-hmm. you know? So if you're, let's just use like an Avery Bradley, for example, if you're signing Avery Bradley, you're signing him for that purpose. Now, if that purpose is not fulfilled, it doesn't look the same.
Right.
And that's the tricky part when it comes to veterans, fair or unfair. And I mean, when you slander Avery Bradley or anything like that, but you know, if you're a movement shooter or you're shooting big and we brought you in to be a shooting big and you're not making shots, are we getting the most out of this? That's where it gets tricky. So it's about fit. It's about opportunity. I don't want to use the word luck because these are players that have really grinded and earned their way through, but you do need to find the right scenarios and situations to thrive. Mm-hmm. Like, you need these teams have to know who you are and you have to perform at that level.
Here we go. And this last one is going to come from Janice. Which yesteryear player would have the most value in 2022?
Michael Jordan.
Yes. Kenyon Martin, a switchable big that could also protect the rim. Shane Battier, low maintenance, versatile defensive forward that was a good high volume 3-point shooter. Or Doug Christie, a versatile defensive forward that could shoot as well as be a secondary or tertiary playmaker. So we'll start there.
Probably Battier. I mean, we saw what he kind of brought to this era before it was this era. Mm-hmm. So I think Battier would be the number one choice for me. I think Kenyon Martin would thrive with his switchability and his ability to roll and protect the rim. Doug Christie's an interesting one.
Yeah, I like that mention. Like, I was torn between Battier and Christie.
Well, Christie's got the defense, he's got the shooting, he's got the cutting. So all three could fit in this era pretty well. I lean Battier just because of the importance of lineup versatility in the playoffs and ability to space the floor. That's just me, though.
I got you. I did also land on Battier for the reasons that you mentioned. But again, just a shout out to Doug Christie, made four all defensive teams. And that wasn't a callback that I was expecting. Had a, 8-year stretch where he's 13-5-4, 2 steals, 36% from three. Like, it's good stuff. Like, also a man before his time in that aspect. Like, it would be cool to see Doug Christie playing off of like a star wing creator, and him slicing and dicing or just spacing off of those guys and taking pressure off defensively. Like, that's a good shout. That's a really good shout. And the second part of that question was, if you were general managers with an excess of cap space, what contract would you offer these players all in their primes if they were unrestricted free agents this past summer?
What do you got, guys? This is definitely your ministry.
This is my thing. Like, I think you're starting to bid and get at least $20 million a year for all three of those guys, honestly. Because you look at it like, Kenyon Martin being switchable and then also protecting the rim and also adding value as a guy that can just puncture the rim as a roller or an offensive rebounder. Like, he's not getting played off the floor in the postseason. Shane Battier absolutely isn't getting played off the floor in the postseason. Doug Christie is not getting played off the floor in the postseason. And so when you have three players that can fit in a multitude of lineups, can defend a multitude of players, and can affect your offense in a multitude of ways, like, you're starting at 20. So I'd say, like, I guess my question would be, like, since Kenyon Martin was, because he was an all-star, was he not?
Oh, Kenyon Martin's getting in 20 plus. I'd probably say 25, going right for bigs. Mm-hmm. In his prime, yeah, he'd be getting paid. Now, Christie and Battier are interesting.
Okay.
Because you could see, I mean, usually that's like they're at least getting 15 going rate. Mm-hmm. You know, if Gary Harris is getting 13, it's hard to imagine those guys not above that. Mm-hmm. Would someone go 20 though? I think might be acts like 18, maybe.
Okay.
Eric Gordon type deal. But it depends on when they sign, you know?
Yeah. They're saying it's in the prime. So if we're, because we're going deep in the weeds now, if we're assuming in their prime, I'm assuming this is coming off of the rookie scale contract in which they are, they're either hitting restricted free agency, which everyone gets overpaid, or you're heading into like the second, or I guess technically the third contract at that point. And so you're just getting the age like 27 through 30 or whatever.
And so that's you went really deep. Let me go undeep. One's getting 4 years, 13.5. Another's getting 4 years, 15.5. And the other is getting 5 years, 20.
There we go. I guess the 5 for $20 million a year would be Kenyon in this case, right?
Ah, but can you guess the other two?
You said 13.5 and 15.5?
Yep.
I'm going to guess 13.5 would be Christie, 15.5 would be Battier.
Okay.
What do you mean, okay? Was that right? Or?
Yeah, you're right.
Ah, okay. I need those sweet endorphins, please. Thank you.
Oh, Lord. This guy said endorphins.
We here.
You don't need the endorphins, man. You're great.
Well, I appreciate that.
Outer validation is overrated.
Okay.
There we validate go. Yourself on this journey we call life.
Very wholesome content.
Do you have free throws?
I do not have free throws.
Again, this man came back with free throws one time. Exactly. One time this man came back with free throws. And that's wild.
You know what? I'll be completely honest with you. I fully planned to have free throws today. I was going to spend today coming up free throw questions, actually.
No, that's fine. Don't worry about it. No, don't worry about it. You're good. Don't worry about it.
I'll have them for the next one. But like the MA thing just threw me all the way off. So that just kind of threw off my thought process for today.
Do you think Ben Simmons being honest when he told JJ that Brooklyn's kind of like Philadelphia on steroids?
I don't know about that one, Chief.
He meant with the shooters.
Oh, well, in that case, I could see it if everyone's there.
Okay. Are you excited for James Wiseman?
I would like to be. I don't know what the future is for him in Golden State. Like, they just seem very locked in with who they are and what they want to be. And I just don't know what the learning curve for him is going to be defensively. And if they're going to give him the patience, you know, my philosophy, like they should use the regular season to see, but like, I don't know if they're going to do that.
Oh, that's your philosophy. Is the Bucks energy going to be the same once Chris Middleton turns this option down?
I would be very surprised if Chris Middleton plays anywhere else aside from Milwaukee to close out his career. I think they're going to be like, wait, we really got to pony up. But like, I think they're going to pony up.
Are you still excited for the Oklahoma City Orlando TNT game on Tuesday, November 1st?
Yes.
Okay. What will the Thunder's record be going into that game? They play 6 games prior.
Okay.
At Minnesota, at Denver, versus Minnesota, versus the Clippers, at Dallas.
I think they're 2-4 going into that game.
2-4. I'm writing this down. All right. And so the Orlando Magic, you're excited for as well, correct?
Uh-huh.
What will their record be? They are at Detroit, at Atlanta, versus Boston, at New York, at Cleveland, versus Charlotte, at Dallas.
See, if they had Miami in there, they would absolutely win that one. They always get the early Miami game. I want to be feisty, be like 4-3, but I think it'd be, I'll say, give me the 7 again. Make sure I'm not.
Man, at Detroit, at Atlanta, versus Boston, at New York, at Cleveland, versus Charlotte, at Dallas.
Okay. Yeah, I'll give them 3-4.
So 2-4 versus 3-4 national TV. That's what you want.
I would like to see young talented players play.
Oh man, there's young. You know what? It's fine. It's fine. Let's see what else I got for you, man. I don't have a ton of free throws. Just kind of vibing, man.
It's all good. It's all good.
How you doing? How's the 2K, bro?
2K is cool. Aside from being called slurs while playing Rick yesterday, not a great time. But you know, people get testy when they're online. You can't see them, so it is what it is.
I'm sorry for that, man.
Okay.
There is a picture I noticed on the internet as I was scrolling.
Okay.
It had a certain person who don't stop.
Yes.
With a picture of him in a clipboard next to Jason Tatum. The tweet reads as, I can't say we'd make the finals, but it would be in an entertaining brand of hoop that has opponents on edge in the playoffs. Get me a defensive coach, some situational X's and O's guys, and when it's time to get a bucket, we move out the way and let the purists cook. What would your first moves as a head coach be, and what coaches would you be looking for?
Oh, man. I saw that and I was trying to wrap my head around like keeping defenses on edge, but also just let the peers cook. Like it's going to be iso ball. Like we know what that's going to be. That's, you're not catching anyone off guard with that. But at any rate,
I have a follow up.
Oh, okay. This should be good.
I've read more, some pure hoopers would have to be brought in for additional creating. Would you add pure hoopers to your team?
Oh goodness. Yeah, I would need a high shot attempt six man off, you know, to add some punch behind my starter, sure.
Peyton Pritchard would be given more freedom to rock out. Who would that six man be?
In Boston?
Yeah.
Oh boy, because I'm not sure if Malcolm Brogdon would classify as a pure hooper in this case. I don't know if Derek White would classify as a pure hooper.
Who's the pure hooper you're bringing in?
Oh, man. We're finding out what Josh Selby is up to. We're going to see.
Wow. All right. The answer was mellow. Jeez Louise. This guy just said.
Hey, man. Summer League / 2K legend. We are here with it.
Who's better? Who would you rank better? Darius Garland or Lonzo Ball?
Garland.
And the hashtag is Big Agenda. Kendrick Perkins agrees with you. Says Darius Garland was ranked too low on the rankings. So he had him above Lonzo Ball as well.
I haven't even seen the ESPN ranking. I hear what a Big Agenda I wasn't even privy to.
That's the key to it.
Yeah, but like, I'm at least aware of the subject matter before. I didn't even know Lonzo was ranked higher than Garland on the ESPN rank.
Yep.
Like on purpose? Like I don't.
Oh boy. All right.
I'm not getting into the ESPN rank thing. Like I would have to find the list. And I know based on how prior ESPN ranks have been, like I know it's going to be some nonsense. And I'm going to be like, wait, why? Like, wait, why is Chris Middleton like 57 or something? I don't know.
Is Patrick Beverley a culture changer?
Yes. He's a guy that infuses some culture, some toughness, some accountability, some energy.
The hashtag is Big Agenda. Yeah. Kendrick Perkins on September 20th, culture changer, brings winning to a culture.
That tracks, yeah.
You're darn right it's tracks.
Oh, God. Are you proud of that?
So is Kawhi Leonard the muscle watch champion for you, or?
I guess, man. I didn't think we were on muscle watch. I don't know. Actually, can I ask you a 2K question very quickly?
What?
How's it going on your end? Why have we not gotten a stream?
Life.
The dunkers have been.
What you mean?
Boo.
The man's booing life. That's crazy. Booed kids the other day. This man is wild.
I did no such.
Unhinged. Unbelievable. So there's a basketball league in Spain that's testing a rule where the refs don't need to control the ball if it goes out of bounds before it's inbounded. What do you think of it?
I kind of like it. Get back on defense. And if you don't, you get punished for it. Pace improves. I'm here for it.
That's not a turnover. Any turnover is just a layup. Everything's a live ball turnover now.
Hey, man, get back.
The play just happened.
Gotta have some awareness. You want to complain? You want to look at your team and like, hey, I was going this way. Why are you going that way? Now it's 2 points. You know, you got to keep it for the timeouts.
All right, man.
Well, what do you think about the rule? You don't like it?
I don't enjoy it too much. Like, I could get it in sometimes, but it's like, okay, so they just sprinted to get the ball. Like, we didn't have a chance. I don't like those turnovers being live ball turnovers too. Sorry.
Okay. I understand where you're coming from.
Also, you did Eurostep past Shai Gilgeous-Alexander being out for the start of training camp.
Ah, yes. So many injury reports. I hope he's okay. I hope this doesn't turn into actually we're going to hold Shai out for 3 months to make sure that he's okay type beat. Like, I hope he's good to go for the opener. Big year for him. Could be anyway. But no, there's enough young and feisty talent that I think OKC can make it interesting early in the year.
That's all I had. I don't have an ending.
Okay. Of course, it would end on the Thunder comment. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of The Dunker Spot. If you have not already, please subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean. Wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. You can find me on Twitter at NikiasNBA. You can find Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. And with that, we will catch y'all next week for division previews.
Bye, guys.